Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast number 157. We're recording this on a Monday, the 14th of March, 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield. There's three of us this week. Ewan's off podcasting at South by Southwest in America. I have Dan in Sussex.
Rafe Blanford.
And up in Hull.
David Gilson.
Now, during the week, if you've started your Symbian device, or whatever vintage, really, a 63rd edition, 5th edition, and Symbian 3, you will have seen a brand new OviStore client. Now, unlike most application updates where they said you wish to update, this one is compulsory. And the reason it's compulsory is that it ties in with architecture changes actually at Nokia's end on the servers. So what they're basically saying is the old version of the client wouldn't work with our new site. So everybody's had to upgrade. This version is 2.06 for Symbian 3 phones and 1.9 for 3rd edition and 5th edition phones. Also includes things like in-app billing or the possibility of in-app billing and enablers for stronger DRM. So there's all sorts of things going on behind the scenes. Now, Rafe, I found that I just had the biggest performance improvements on my Symbian 3 phones and that the new versions on the older devices didn't really seem much different.
Yes, that was my experience as well. I suspect this is can be explained by the fact they've updated some of the components on the Symbian 3 devices. My understanding of the OviStore client is that it's kind of a hybrid between web runtime and Qt. Specifically, it uses some of the Qt WebKit stuff, which is what gives it the performance boost. And that's probably been updated, hence the performance improvements. There may also be stuff on the server side as well, where it's sort of minimizing the amount of data it has to send back and forth. But obviously, the older devices, S65th edition, S63rd edition, are sort of pure web runtime applications with more data going back and forth, which is why the performance is less. There's also, of course, the actual speed of the devices themselves and the implementation of web runtime has a big impact there. But my experience was also, I noticed the biggest speed improvements on Symbian 3, although I suspect there may be improvements as well on the older devices, but of course, unless you do side-by-side testing, and even that can be misleading, it's hard to tell. But yes, there are performance improvements in Symbian 3, which is great because I think having an app store that's got efficient speed, or rather is, just one touch, it starts loading things straight away, makes for a much more pleasant user experience. People are more likely to download stuff, therefore more likely to buy, etc., and everything that leads on for that. So it's good to see that Nokia are keeping the updates flowing on that. And as you say, there's also the back-end architecture changes. In terms of the in-app billing and the stronger DRM, these are sort of currently being tested by a limited number of Nokia publishers, number of their partners. And so you will start to see these appear in the App Store. I haven't actually come across any in-app billing ones myself. We'll let you know as soon as we see, because I'm sure people will be interested to see how they work. But this is kind of the testing in the live environment. They've done this before with the OviStore updates, specifically with things like Qt in the past. So it's not available for everybody, but once this sort of trial period is over, other publishers will be able to get in-app billing as well. And I suspect we'll start to see that fairly widely implemented, because it's certainly been a successful revenue generator on other app stores.
Okay, moving on. There's a new application that's been out the last couple of weeks, which David's been looking at, to do with wallpapers. Now, people who may have seen Android smartphones, you will be used to the concept of a panoramic wallpaper, whereas as you swipe from home screen to home screen, the background seamlessly just shifts across a tiny bit, giving a kind of 3D impression. Now, this doesn't quite do the same thing, but it sounds from the description and the title, David, that it tries to get very close. How far does it succeed?
Well, it succeeds as much as it can within the limitations of Symbian 3. It's a very useful tool for just basically taking a large wallpaper, even say a desktop wallpaper, and doing the drudgery of slicing it up for you. What panel wallpaper gives you in terms of options, it will ask you whether you want it to be best fitted for portrait or landscape, because what Symbian 3 does for different orientations is that it will significantly scale the picture from one orientation to another. So if you know you're going to be using one mode or another, you can choose that. But there is also a square option where it will cut out, if necessary, overlapping sections, which are 640 square. And they'll be cropped, but they will look better. But the thing is with Symbian 3 is that it doesn't work like Android. There isn't one wallpaper that you drag across and you get the slight parallax effect. Symbian 3 has a fading transition, so it does spoil the panoramic effect.
PR2 though, David. Apparently that's one of the things that is going to change. So maybe this utility will be an awful lot more useful in a month or so's time.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Maybe they know something I don't know. but even now, as it is, what it is good for is if you like the idea of having several home screens with commonly themed wallpapers rather than separate, distinct wallpapers, it'll do that perfectly for you. And it's free as well, which I think is a very good price.
Yeah, it's worth noting that if you turn transitions off in your theme section and settings, then you don't get the fade to black between home screens, and it is slightly more of a panoramic effect. So that's certainly worth experimenting with, I think.
Yes, definitely. It's I think people who are just using the phone on default settings and don't go digging around will miss that, though, unfortunately.
Yeah. So but it seems like Symbian's still got a way to go there in terms of eye candy, although we know that eye candy isn't everything. On with another rather controversial issue, and this is the Pritstick issue. This is where I managed to give Rafe a heart attack at the end of last week by Pritsticking rubber grip mat at the bottom of the official All About Symbian review Nokia E7. The problem, as Ewan illustrated in his first video review of the E7 on the plane over to Austin, Texas, he was showing how as you type and use the device, it basically skates across the airline plane lap tray. And I was finding exactly the same thing on my nice shiny office desk. And all the previous communicators had rubber feet, which actually keep the device still. The E7 doesn't. So this was my half-baked solution, and rest assured, the Pritstick did come off after a few seconds of wiping with a wet wipe. So I haven't ruined your review device, Rafe. Obviously, a more professional and polished solution would be A, to either buy some little proper professional rubber feet or rubber strips from an accessories store, or to go for one of these silicone cases. And there's an official Nokia silicone case, one half that goes on the screen half, of course, and one half that goes on the bottom half, so the two separate as the screen opens out. And we have ordered one of those, and as soon as that comes in, that will get a review, and hopefully we'll solve this problem into the boot. And also, we'll also take the camera glass off the desk surface, which is one of the other problems I was trying to fix with my rather half-baked solution. But I do think this grip problem is a real issue, Rafe. What were your thoughts?
Yes, I think this comes from the classic communicator use case of sort of using it with touch typing mode on a desktop, where I think most people, when they're using a mobile phone, are used to cradling it in their hands. Now, I absolutely agree that, you know, putting it on the desk and sort of doing touch typing-esque, I should say, is, you know, a viable usage scenario. And so, yes, in that sense, perhaps there has been something missed out there. But I do feel that the majority of people are probably still going to be using it on the go as a mobile device rather than sort of mini laptop style. So I think it's very much depending on the type of person that's using this device. But I was slightly horrified by Steve's blunt edge approach, shall we say. But as he says, there is an official Nokia case. And for those who want to get it on pre-order, the actual model number, that is CC1010. It's a Nokia silicon cover for Nokia E7. It comes in black, although I'm sure there'll be some other colours as well. It starts around £10 from most online retailers. As far as we can tell, it's not available yet, but I'm sure it's going to start becoming available shortly and will probably be available in the Nokia shops as well. So if you're experiencing this sort of slipping, sliding problem, there is a solution that is maybe a little more elegant than Steve's Pritstick approach.
You just shows you can't please all the people all the time, though, Rafe, because the silicone cases, I mean, the one for the N8 fits beautifully. I mean, it really transforms the device. But then people say, well, I can't put it in my pocket. And it's quite true. The silicone case is so grippy. If you try and slide it into a jeans pocket, you really have to struggle to get it in and out. And it gathers a huge amount of fluff because everything gets attracted and gripped to it. So a shiny device that slides across the desk, or something that's so grippy you can't put it in your pocket.
Well, there you go. It's another great example of design compromise. And I actually remember this from carrying around the E90. It was liable to lose its little rubber feet off the bottom if you were taking it in and out of your pocket, you know, presumably the rubber feet catching on something. Yeah. So I can remember there was a fairly popular aftermarket E90 rubber feet on eBay at one point. So as you say, you know, there are pluses and minuses on every side of this sort of thing, and I think it will very much depend on how you're looking to use the device. And as I say, typically when I've been using the E7, I have to admit I've been cradling it in my hands. I wonder whether that's subconsciously because I'm more used to doing that, or because when I have put it on the desk it's slipped around. But I'd suggest that perhaps rather than gluing the non-stick mat to the E7, it might be more effective to put the non-stick mat on the desk and then put the E7 on that if you're looking for a sort of short-term solution.
I was thinking, though, that surely it's these anodized, tough, unibody aluminium bodies that they're fine to take up with this sort of mistreatment, though, aren't they?
They certainly should be. I mean, the point about the anodized aluminium, of course, it's a chemical process which sort of imbues the dye into the metal, and therefore they're what's described as scratch resistant. I mean, if you take a screwdriver and gouge out along it, you course you will get a scratch, but you know, it should be able to resist, you know, coins in the pocket or sort of scraping along a desk without any problem. And certainly my evidence, I would generally back that up. I mean, it's still possible to scratch it, but if you rub a coin across it and then sort of rub on the metallic finish, on the aluminium finish, it will sort of disappear any scratches. But I think, as always, these devices are still relatively delicate, so I'll do my best not to abuse them too much.
So of course, the camera glass, David, is basically plastic. It's not actually glass at all, and it's certainly not Gorilla Glass. So I know it's scratch-resistant coating on that plastic, but that's the thing which is going to really scratch up. And, of course, it's not just about scratches. It's the fact that the device is physically skating away from you and is unpleasant to type on because it's not staying still. And but certainly putting the E7 on these grip mats, I mean, it completely transformed the way I use the device. I could type on it with one hand, just absentmindedly at an angle, and know that the device was going to stay still and not shoot off across the desk.
I think an even more low-tech approach might be a few blobs of blue tack.
Okay. So, yes, you spend £500 on your E7 only to stick some blue tack on it or some Pritstick. As I say, I think I favour putting it on a non-stick mat or perhaps getting this silicon case to solve the solution rather than a, not low-tech solution, but more blunt force, as they say.
You might not have any money left after buying one.
I like the solution there. That's good. Moving on from such antics, if you'd like to become famous and have money as well, there's a competition out for the people who own a Nokia N8, which is worth publicising. This is organised by Nokia UK via their Facebook page. I mention it because if you like taking photos, and you can take some pretty arty ones and impressive ones, if you can see your photograph blown up to billboard size and get £1,000 spending money, then they just go to Nokia UK's Facebook page and you can submit as many photos as you want. So if you've taken 50, you can submit all 50 and dramatically multiply your chances of winning. All you've got to do is basically like their page and enter your photos. So we'll put the link in the show notes. Essentially, I'll give you a short code. Actually, it's nokia.ly/F3R1J. So we'll put the link in the show notes as well. So do go and see that if you're an arty photographer. I've entered about three of mine, which is not terribly ambitious. I guess I need to get out and take some more photos in the sun.
Yeah, just to add to that, Steve, I think it's quite a clever idea that Nokia have had here. They're actually going to take the kind of the winning photos and then place them on a billboard close to your location, as you sort of specify in your competition entry. So potentially you'll be able to see a sort of 60-foot billboard with your photo on it, blown up many times. And of course, you also mentioned there's a cash prize and various other bits and pieces. But I think that's quite a clever way with engaging the audience. And it just brings me to think about some of the other advertising Nokia have been doing recently for the N8. I think there's been a noticeable departure from something that they've done before. They've been quite brash about boasting about the N8's camera capabilities. There's now been a couple of adverts out there on various different themes, and the underlying sub-message is N8 best camera phone ever fact. And it's, drawing on a couple of reviews of the N8, which have had it coming out as the best camera phone. And certainly would agree with that. One of the best camera phones on the market, and arguably with some of the other bits and pieces that go with it, the all-round camera package and video is undoubtedly the best on the market as far as we're concerned. You can look at other areas, and of course this is debatable, but I don't think it's an unfair bit of advertising. And I've noticed they've started also doing stuff on the Yahoo homepage in another way, where they're using the interactive advertising, again using photos taken with the N8, noticing different quirks that come out, people wearing sort of strainers on their head or escaped lions in Hyde Park and things like that. And I actually think it's quite a clever way of appealing to the consumer market, because although on the podcast and the people listening to this, we debate the technical merits back and forth endlessly. For a lot of people, you will go into your phone shop and you'll look at just a few bullet points underneath the phone. And, for a lot of people, capturing images is one of the most important things that they can do with their camera. They stop carrying around their own digital camera. And so saying, very clearly, this is the best camera phone ever fact, strikes me as, you know, quite a clever move. I'm sure it's going to alienate a certain number of geeks who are sort of immediately going to start talking about the fact that, you know, Symbian's dead, they've announced the end of life, etc., etc. But I still think, you know, a lot of people out there could buy this and be perfectly happy because, as we've said, you know, Symbian is continuing. There's more apps coming out, and obviously, perhaps we can mention that later in the podcast. But they are going to get a fantastic piece of camera phone equipment out of this, producing really great images. And Steve made a very good post, I think, at Christmas time, talking about how the memories you get from those photos last forever. And, you know, people may well think back and be very grateful that they've got something like the N8 for, you know, capturing those memories, if you like. So I think it does tie into the strongest element of the N8, this advertising campaign. And that's always going to be a good thing when you're trying to sell a device like this.
Yeah, and I've been really pleased to see that Nokia are finally pushing the N8, and I particularly noticed last night they had like a lot of primetime Sunday night TV adverts. We have this advertising campaign with a blind man taking photos as well, which I have mixed feelings about. But the thing that's kind of, while I'm pleased for pushing the N8, because the N8 is something special in terms of smartphones because of its camera, so I'd be absolutely right to push it, and I'm pleased that they are. But the thing that I felt really frustrated about is that how long has the N8 been out? It's like losing momentum. They should have been doing this sooner.
Yeah, I think that's typical of the advertising campaigns, though. I mean, as we've said many times before, the number of phones that are actually sold in a sort of entire life cycle, you know, we tend to focus on the launch period where there's lots of excitement, but actually supply can be quite constrained there. And it's only later on that it becomes available in significant quantities, especially to networks. And in the UK, obviously, the majority of people are still buying through networks rather than SIM-free or anything else like that. And as much as people, you know, don't really like to say this, you know, advertising will have a big impact on sales. It will make people go out and buy it. And so, yes, I agree with you, David. I might like to see this a little bit earlier, you know, perhaps when there was less competition around for the N8. The fact that they're doing this now, I think, remains a good thing. I think it's just worth bearing in mind that the majority of sales of a device don't take place in the first couple of months. They actually take place in the sort of later 12 months or even 18 months or longer. I mean, there's devices that are a couple of years old which are still being sold in the high street even now. And I suspect something similar may well apply to the N8, although no doubt it will have replacement devices come along. I mean, you walk into a UK phone shop and you can still buy a 5800 today, for example, and that's getting on for, I guess, 2.5 years old now. I think always with this advertising, you have to consider it's aimed at a different market than the typical listener to this podcast or indeed reader on All About Symbian. Yeah.
There's also a seasonal aspect in the fact that pitching it as a camera phone, most people back in December and January don't immediately think, I want to start taking lots of photos on a phone, whereas now we're getting into spring, certainly in the UK, and we're talking about UK advertising here. The sun's coming out and people are starting to see colours in their life and they think, yes, I do want a great camera phone this year. And so they will respond to those adverts. Now, of course, I in the past have said, well, the point of the N8 is the xenon flash, so you can take great photos even in December, January and February when the light's really awful. But that's not how most people will perceive it. They'll see the sun, they'll think of holidays, they'll think of breaks, and they'll think, right, I want a good camera phone, and then they'll pick up on the N8.
And you could, of course, say that Christmas time is a good time to be taking photos as well. So, like, you get your relative like a nice camera to get out on Christmas and they run around taking snaps all day.
I think also we should probably look at the fact that Nokia has had a new CEO come in, a new head of marketing. And so I suspect some of the changes, particularly the more aggressive nature or the aggressive tone of the adverts. And I don't mean aggressive in a bad sense. I mean, as in putting it out there, this is the best camera phone fact. It's probably the result of a strategy that's been signed off and sort of approved. So I think that change in tone, which, let's face it, is pretty atypical for a company like Nokia, which tends to be fairly conservative in its marketing messages and, you know, rather, I'd almost say, shy in talking about its strong points. And so that's perhaps why this NA advertising campaign, which we've now spent a good 10 minutes talking about, has come to our attention a bit more than some of their previous efforts. And the fact we're talking about it like this, I think, is probably a good sign of it being a good idea and hopefully successful.
Yeah, and just one last point. Nokia, yes, they definitely are shy. It's talking about their good points, and I think it's something that they need to change. HTC had a fantastic advertising campaign, just talking about almost to us trivial features like a digital compass on the phone. But it makes perfect sense. It's really useful, and like And to us, we've had it on Symbian for a long time. We say, well, why wouldn't you have that? So why not push it for good features?
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on from Nokia advertising, as they're not paying us for this podcast, or indeed for anything we do, I should hastily point out. We'll move on to something that also Rafe referred to just now, which is applications. And I know there are some new applications in the market. I think you wanted to mention a few of them, Rafe. But before we do that, you readers may have spotted my article during the week comparing the top selling and the top freeware downloads in the Apple App Store versus their equivalents in the Symbian world. And what I wanted to debunk, if possible, was the fact that the iPhone App Store was automatically superior simply because it had 400,000 applications as opposed to the, what is it, 18,000 genuine applications in the Symbian and the Nokia Obvi Store. Now, if you look down my tables, and I'm sure you two both read the article, and I'm sure most of the people on the site read the article, what was your overall impression? Mine was that the Symbian App Store and Nokia's Obvi Store wasn't that far behind. Rafe?
Yes, I was pleasantly surprised reading this article when you first said to me, it would be interesting what the results of that come out as. And as you say, you know, there were matches or in some cases exact matches for almost everything on the list. I would be the first to say that, you know, obviously looking at the top 40 only gives you part of the pitch, and one of the strengths of the App Store and the Android marketplace is its long tail and the ability to find applications for, you know, the more niche markets. But of course, you know, the most popular ones are in some ways the most important applications because they're the ones that get downloaded the most. I think, you know, as came out in your list, there is still some weakness around specific sure. brand applications and internet services in particular. But outside of those, and particularly in the sort of core productivity niches, the more traditional application areas, actually I think Symbian came out very well. So it was interesting to see that kind of comparison. And I think your conclusions in saying that, you know, the Obvi Store isn't as far behind as App Store or, you know, the marketplaces, most people tend to assume, because there's almost an automatic writing off of Obvi Store, I think, perhaps yeah. because of its early struggles. You know, I don't think anyone would deny the launch was pretty disastrous, but it has come on leaps and bounds. And we've seen that not only in the client version that we were talking about earlier, but the content is really starting to get there as well, which is a shame in one sense. I think it's almost coming too late in a sense. But on the other hand, for all those that do have Symbian devices, it's kind of good news because there are plenty of new things, you know, ways to extend your device coming out. And of course, Symbian have talked about being able to sell another 150 million devices. And, you know, if people take the time to look beyond, you know, surface assumptions, actually, Obvi Store, while maybe not providing an equal experience, is certainly holding its own, I think. So, you know, and you pointed to specific areas like games was it particularly interesting, yeah. Where obviously I still think iOS reigns supreme there just because sure, of the sheer sure. quantity coming through. But you pointed out quite rightly that actually Obvi Store seems to be outdoing the Android marketplace. And obviously Android is the big story at the moment in terms of its amazing growth rate and obviously very popular. But I think it says something to me that it's been able to do that without having particularly strong, you know, gaming content in its marketplace. And so it, you know, just kind of suggests to me that although apps are important, I don't think anyone denies that, I think sometimes the importance of them when people are making a purchase decision does get overemphasized. I do believe it's a factor, but I think, you know, to say that people buy purely on App Store basis is incorrect, except in a small percentage of cases.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a really interesting feature and bringing out a bit of information that certainly surprised me somewhat.
Yeah, and actually I'd agree with everything Rafe just said. I mean, it's good to see that there are some, like, well-known brands coming over to Symbian. I mean, like, for example, like Tesco and Shazam. It's still frustrating that there's still an absence of some brands, like, say, Amazon Kindle that we talked about before. It's you still feel as if we're missing out on some certain high value brands. But I think another interesting thing was is that there was a couple of instances, like say a download manager and Torch applications, where Symbian actually doesn't need the applications because they have the features built in.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting as well, David. And the other thing I just want to address here is asking both you, David, and Steve, do you think that given that Symbian now has put a finite lifetime on Symbian, we'll see some of the developers move away. And so having sort of got to the point where they were in a pretty good position, things will start to die back a bit. I mean, I have my own views on this, but Steve, what's your opinion on that?
I think we haven't reached that point yet, in the sense that the apps which were in development 2 or 3 months ago are still being finished off and submitted. I think there will be a dying down. But then again, I come back to my point I keep making. How many applications do you actually need in an app store, and how many do you need on a device? I keep coming back to my editorial about most people, even power users like myself, I only actually use about a dozen applications, and that's absolute most. I can probably get away with 5 or 6. And I do not believe you need, I know there's a long tail effect. I know there are extreme niche applications to help you bird watching in the Scilly Isles. I mean, it's a great example of a niche application, but it's not exactly a showstopper when people choose a device, and it's not a showstopper even for the person with that interest. There are always ways of using the built-in applications on the device to support that hobby or that interest. So yes, I think there will be a dying away of new applications, and certainly big brand applications, towards the second half of this year. But that still doesn't mean there's not a pretty hefty weight of applications already available. David, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with what you've just said. I think I can't help but think that it's going to be a disincentive for anyone to start developing something from the ground up. But certainly people who are already in the process of making something are going to carry on. And I think actually over the past few years in the Symbian world, developers have been crazy, because Symbian was the biggest smartphone platform on the planet, and they were missing out on that massive audience.
Yeah, I think what the both of you say very clearly there is that it often depends on kind of the market demand and things like that. And obviously Symbian still has a big weight of numbers behind it and more to come. And so there's definitely a market opportunity there. But I also think you have to look at the motivations of developers. And there's definitely different categories here. You know, the purely commercial developers are looking to make money out of it. And at the moment, I think the general trend is still that the Apple App Store is the most lucrative. But there's been lots of discussion about how the Android marketplace isn't particularly good for selling applications, and it's hard to make money there. And there's a suggestion that actually Obby Store has been relatively successful, and we've seen Nokia quote a few numbers about that without being too absolute about any sort of amounts in terms of profit. But I think there is still potential there, and therefore there will still be developers looking to get their wares in, especially when they're probably thinking there will be a little bit less competition around. And I think that particularly applies to games when you're porting things across. If you've developed it for one platform, the cost of porting to another platform is obviously a lot smaller, and it's easier therefore to justify for a company like Gameloft, for example. Yeah. So I think we'll continue to see stuff from them right up until quite late on. And the point that Steve made is that I think people don't always appreciate the amount of time that goes into developing an application. You know, that can be on the scale of, you know, 6 or even 12 months or even longer for the very big applications. And so we'll see some of those projects coming to, you know, maturity over the next 6 to 12 months. So that will mean there's more coming in. And then you also have to address the kind of other motivations. And it's often from free applications from hobbyist developers. I think we'll continue to see those as well, because it tends to be people scratching an itch, you know, wanting to develop something for their own phone. And with all of that, clearly there is an inevitability about the fact that there is some motivation taking away, some reason taking away for developing applications for a platform that has been given an end of life. But at the same time, you have to sort of bear in mind that the existing market and the market still to come is actually bigger than a lot of the sort of other platforms on their own. You know, you look at RIM, for example, or some of the small platforms like Windows Phone. And I think actually what we'll see is, you know, some of the developers will switch their efforts to Windows Phone because they'll see, you know, Nokia devices coming there. But I don't think there'll be this dramatic fall off that some are predicting. I think it'll be a much more gradual process that takes place over the next 2 years. And a certain amount of that is actually going to be offset by the fact that Nokia have made better tools available in the form of Qt and are making it easier than ever to access the market through Obby Store. And so what is probably a more interesting question is, if there had been a continuation of Symbian Amigo, what would the application and game levels have been like? And I suspect there would have been quite a significant acceleration. And so what we will see now, you know, with the situation we are in, is probably there won't be so much of an acceleration, but we probably won't see a drop-off, because any drop-off will be counteracted by the fact there's easier development tools and easier access to the market around, plus maybe, you know, the less competition, the other factors we talked about there. So I don't think this is a, you know, a open and shut case, as some people suggest, you know, application developers jumping off a cliff. They're quite rational people, and it's, you know, about the money for one group of them at least. And it's not, as I say, you know, open and shut case. So be interested to hear other people's feedback on this. So, you know, do comment in the podcast comment feed or email us and let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, certainly the numbers of applications being launched each week. I mean, one thing we've got on board within All About Symbian, Rafe, just to let listeners know, is a way of tracking the new actual applications that get released each week and listing them with all their attributes. And it's a tool I gather you're planning we may release at some point to the wider public. But just a comment that the raw number of applications each week, sort of 20, 30, 40, 50, they don't seem to have dropped off significantly yet. And certainly there have been some brand names. You did mention brands earlier, and there's Debenhams I saw a couple of days ago launched a high profile of the application. Have you had a chance to try it yet, Rafe?
I've had a quick look at this, and it's sort of fairly typical of the shopping applications that allows you to sort of, you know, have a mobile experience for buying stuff from the Debenhams store. It's quite well put together, and we'll have a little post on that on the site later. But yes, you're quite right there. There do continue to be quite a number of applications. It varies between 50 and 100 new apps a week. And yes, we will be making that information more readily available. And when we talk about that sort of 50 to 100 number, that's actual apps, and that's excluding some of the Ovi App Wizard applications. So this is sort of, if you like, real applications and games. Another one that caught my eye, for example, in the last week is Navionics, which is quite a well-known sort of maritime navigation product, which allows you, you know, to access information about sea charts and navigation, you know, tides and currents, you know, do tracking and waypoints, you know, effectively navigation but for the sea. And that's released a whole bunch of applications for various parts of the world. So, you know, if you're a maritime sailor, they're well worth checking out. So that's Navionics, which if you search for that in the Ovi store, you should be able to come across the listing. There's sort of 30 or 40 different applications for different areas of the world. But, you know, we're still seeing continued, you know, small utilities coming in. Just looking through the list here, there's ones here that lock up contacts, and so if you want to password protect your contacts, that's available as well. As well as, you know, sort of some of the, if you like, throwaway games that are typical of App Store these days, you know, costing just a single euro and are almost disposable apps, if you like. But, you know, also you're seeing more of the Nokia applications also coming into Ovi Store. Nokia Big Screen, which sort of debuted in Beta Labs, is now available through Ovi Store, as well as Office Communicator, which is a kind of Microsoft solution for business IM. And I think that's also become available. And so I think Nokia getting a lot more effective about putting all the applications that are available onto Ovi Store. And the similar one there for everyone listening to this podcast will probably be familiar with QuickOffice. They've now made sure that the latest versions and a free trial is available through Ovi Store. Obviously that makes sense as people are turning to Ovi Store more and more to get their applications and sort of turning away from perhaps what they're used to doing of going directly to developer websites or, you know, some of the other ESD stores. And so, you know, I think Ovi Store, you know, despite all the criticism it receives, is actually, you know, still pretty strong. Yeah. And the content is improving all the time. To say, we will try and make this tool available, because one of the frustrations I have with the Ovi Store client as it stands is actually working out what applications are new, as opposed to just having a small update. Is pretty hard to do, and it's actually one of my major remaining criticisms of the Ovi Store. It's quite hard, as I say, to work out these new and these updated lists, and hopefully that's something Nokia will fix in the future. But in the meantime, we'll hopefully provide something that will keep people happy.
Yeah, the big thing, though, the one thing that we've been saying for over a year, Rafe, is that there needs to be some way of the Ovi Store managing updating applications that people have downloaded. I mean, the iPhone App Store and Android Marketplace are very good at this, and the Ovi Store is very bad at it. At the moment, it's dependent on the developers themselves to write auto-update checking within their own code, which is fair enough and a good way to go, but it should really be also managed centrally. And I think the Nokia's Ovi team really need to get to grips with that. But
absolutely agree with that. I mean, they say that's on the roadmap, and we've got in-app billing coming in as well. And there are a couple of other updates that, you know, would do Nokia very well to get it in place. And a few people have asked, you know, why are they bothering when they're going to be losing, you know, the reason for having the Ovi Store when they switch to Windows Phone. Well, there's a couple of things here. A lot of the back-end technology may well still be reused in Windows Phone, particularly things like the operator billing, but even the in-app billing mechanism as well. You know, a lot of the work on that is actually the agreements you have to sign with operators or other sort of billing agents in order to set that kind of thing up, and that could obviously be reused. But also there's the factors the fact that, you know, obviously it will be still relevant for all the Symbian devices, of which there will be a lot and continue to be for a couple of years and even after that, but there's also Series 40 and, of course, potentially MeeGo devices as well. So there is, you know, very much a reason to keep the OVISOR going. And with regard to Windows Phone specifically, Nokia have said that they will be accepting applications through OviPublish as well as going through Microsoft. So I suspect we'll see something of a dual route remaining in place. And you know, obviously with the two app stores combining together on Windows Phone, I suspect we may well see a retention of the OviStore name and some of the features. It will be interesting to see how exactly that works out. But obviously, even just looking at the existing device and one still to come, there's very much a reason for them to keep investing in the technology. And I think we'll see more updates to come later this year in terms of things like application updates. And I know there's a whole roadmap they've got laid out for OviStore. So no doubt we'll see more in due course.
Yeah, of course, updates appearing across the board through the next few months. People have been commenting a lot on the upcoming PR 2.0 or version 20 firmware, however you want to refer to it, with the Portrait QWERTY keyboard for many of the Symbian 3 devices and the new slicker home screen I referred to earlier and the revamped web browser. People have been intimating across the web, and I read this goes through my feed today, that it's imminent. I don't think it is imminent. If you're listening to this podcast, I think we still got at least several weeks at least. There are various clues that appear around the web in terms of the latest firmware appearing on Nokia's remote device access, where developers can test their applications on new firmware, for example, and none of the devices there yet have got the new firmware. So I think we're talking weeks, maybe even a month or so away. Does that sound about right, Rafe?
Yes, I mean, these things are always difficult to guess at, but I would suspect that an April date is more likely than anything else at the moment. But Nokia, feel free to prove us all wrong and release it sometime in the next week or so. But it'll arrive when it arrives. And of course, with this kind of thing, there's a lot of testing that has to be done, especially on an update that's as major as this. And I think people will be pleasantly surprised with some of the things coming in. You know, it fixes the two big obvious problems in the browser and the Portrait QWERTY keyboard, but there are quite a number of other things as well. This update will, I think, as well have a new icon set, and so that will probably address one of the other big problems that people seem to have, which I can never really understand, that it looks the same in terms of iconography. But we'll get the full details of that, of course, when it's released, and you'll be able to see it all on All About Symbian.
Absolutely. So do stay tuned, everyone. And we've come to the end of this All About Symbian Insight podcast. You can catch us on Twitter, of course, at AAS for the official feed. There's also at Rafe Blandford, at David Gilson, and at Steve Litchfield, all as they sound. And yes, our dear departed Ewan Spence over in America. He is at Ewan, E-W-A-N. But for now, it's goodbye from me and goodbye in Sussex from
Rafe Blandford.
And goodbye up in Hull.
It's bye from David Gilson. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Catch you next week.